This is Wendy Halley, and you're listening to Lucid Cafe. Welcome to the final episode of Lucid Cafe's first season. I knew starting this podcast was going to be cool, but I had no idea how great an experience it would be. I've met some amazing new people, I've gotten to know a few old friends better, and I've learned so, so much. It's a lot of work, especially doing two podcasts, but it's crazy enjoyable. If you're not aware, I have another podcast I do with my friend Claire. I honestly didn't mean to make that rhyme. I guess I just channeled my really bad inner poet. Anyway, if you're looking for a dose of off-color, irreverent entertainment that's frequently inappropriate, check out our satirical advice podcast, Inside the Box with Claire and Wendy. You can find it pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts. In this episode of Lucid Cafe, I had a really fun time talking with my guest, Kim Fuller. Kim is a physical therapist who reads hands. We're not talking carnival palm reading here. We're talking about a practice that Kim describes as a kind of science, a nuanced practice that she studied over a long period of time that sounds as involved as a college program. In our conversation, we talk about all the rich, detailed material that can be unearthed from examining the lines, patterns, and shape of your hands. Please enjoy my conversation with Kim Fuller. Thank you, Kim, for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me.
I'm so psyched that you're here.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. I like talking about this stuff.
And I bet people are wondering what this stuff is. So why don't you give us an idea of what it is that you do?
Okay. So I read hands. I often start out with someone when I meet them if they've ever heard of hand reading before and what their concept of it is. Because for some people, they equate it with palmistry, which is just another term for hand analysis. But they always equate palmistry with someone looking at your hand and telling you something scary, like you're going to die in 2 days or something like that.
Fortune telling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you go to the carnival.
Yeah.
And meet with some woman dressed in flowy clothing and lots of eye makeup.
Yeah. Yeah. He's kind of mysterious and scary at the same time. And I've actually had people tell me that they ran into people, so they read hands and they put their hand out and the person looked at the hand and dropped it. And didn't say anything else to them beyond that. So I think people come to me sometimes a little leery about what it is that I'm going to share with them.
Somebody looked at their hand who reads hands and then would their eyes get really big?
Yeah.
And then they were like, I can't speak of this. And they walk away.
I've had a few people pick up and tell me that someone actually looked at their hand and was like, oh, whoa. Or, oh, that's bad. I never told them what it was.
Damn.
And then just left.
That's unsettling.
It is unsettling.
Yeah.
So
I can't believe people would actually come to you after having that experience.
Well, they're curious. They're scared, but they're curious. Like, what did this person see? And they'll often say to me, do you see anything bad in my hands? I said, the way I look at hands, it's more scientific. It's reproducible. There's been people that have done a lot of research on hand analysis. And so this is reproducible data that I'm looking at, and none of it's ever scary, and it's not predictive. I think that's why it's not scary. It's just not predictive. It's looking at patterns in your hands to talk to someone about. We break it in the school that I studied, and I got certified in it in 2015. We break it down into your soul psychology, which is based on your fingerprint style, and your personality psychology, which is based on the rest of your hand. So the shape of your hands, the style of lines you have in your hands and things like that. Soul psychology is what you're here to do, what gets in the way of it, what you're here to kind of learn about, because there's four different, we call schools, what people are here to learn about, because it's in your fingerprint style that never changes, is going to follow you around the rest of your life, even if you get really great at understanding your life purpose, your life lesson, and what you're here to learn about, it's still going to be in your life because it's your fingerprint pattern. The rest of the hand, the personality psychology, that can change with time. Even the major lines, the heart line, which is your communication style, headline is your thinking style, and then the lifeline is your... people worry that has to do with how long they're going to live.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's when you're going to die.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Because people can have really short lifelines and live a long time and vice versa. But the lifeline is more about your need to live close to family or communities. So you look at how close it sits to the base of the thumb. If it's close, it's someone who likes to be close to community and family. If it swings way away from it, it means it likely has an adventuresome spirit, may not need to live by societal or community norms.
I wouldn't know anything about that. I was thinking, it's like my lifeline is so far away from my thumb. It's like on my other hand.
Yeah. Yeah. And we do, the school I did, we did use some old school kind of language. So someone, there's, you know, lifeline, that could be the line that means death in a foreign land. Doesn't mean you're going to die in a foreign land. It just means that you don't have a need to stay in your hometown like 500 generations of your family did, because that's what you like. Because that's kind of a person has like an adventuresome lifestyle versus someone who's really close in. That might be someone who's, they're perfectly happy living in their great-great-great-great-grandfather's house.
It makes you wonder how that phrase came to be. Like, how did it get that moniker to begin with?
Yeah. It's one of those mysterious kind of scary terms that freak people out a little bit. So I don't necessarily use that one with people, but I like some of the old school terms that we learned and when it got certified. So,
How long has this practice been around, reading hands?
I think you can look at multiple cultures and it's been around for hundreds of years. I honestly don't remember the year that I get certified by the International Institute of Hand Analysis, which was started by Richard Unger. And I honestly don't remember the date that he opened his school. He studied hand analysis for a while and then decided to teach it. So it's data that you learn. And yeah, so you learn data. And there's two, you can do a basic course, which is like a long weekend where it teaches you to look at fingerprints, helps you to identify fingerprint styles. So you can do a really great reading from just knowing fingerprint patterns and things.
So they say that no two fingerprints are alike, right?
Right.
But there are common patterns?
Common patterns, yeah. So when police use fingerprints, they're really looking at it at a micro level.
They're trying to identify a person.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because if you really blow up a fingerprint big, there's like little dots around the pattern of the print. So when I look at them, I'm kind of looking at from a macro level. So when people get fingerprinted, sometimes you do that now for schools and you roll your finger. If you were a kid, you used to do the pencil and like scrub pencil on your finger and put it down to get your fingerprints.
And a nice dose of lead poisoning.
Yes. True. Yeah. Like they don't do that so much anymore. Or you can use a magnifying glass and look at it. But so there's four distinct fingerprint styles. And then there's variations of that. But that's when I look at fingerprints for life purpose, I look at all 10 fingerprints. The highest count ends up being your life purpose. The lowest count is your life lesson. And then there's four distinct patterns, or there's four schools, what you're here to learn about. And so the highest count ends up being what school you're in.
So looking at somebody's soul purpose, mm-hmm. or determining that, are there themes to that where there's only so many soul purposes you can, is it as unique as each individual?
It's as unique as every individual. So I could go someplace theoretically and read 500 prints, and there might be people that have the same life purpose, but their life lesson might be different, or their life school might be different. That's just based on the fingerprint patterns only. But I could have people maybe people that have all those same things, but then if I look at their lines and their hands, their lines are very different. So to get a good picture of each individual person, you want to look at the whole picture of everything.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
So how did you end up getting into this?
Oh, so I think I was trying to think of the dates for this. I think roughly maybe about 2009, I went to the Vermont Women's Expo and there was a woman there, Janet Savage, who had a booth and she reads hands. And so I did a little mini reading thing there, was super intrigued, paid for a full reading, which I went and got later on. And so I was kind of blown away by that a little bit. And she sent a copy to me and I tried to listen to it at one point. It didn't play. I was kind of lazy. I didn't call her back to say, oh, I can't listen to that recording. Then 2013, I think it was, a friend won a gift certificate and she was never going to use it. So she gave it to me. So I had an updated reading and Janet asked me to listen to the old one before I came. I said, oh, funny thing. I never was able to listen to that. So she sent it to me. And in hindsight, it was kind of ironic. It made me laugh is that I wasn't ready to hear what she told me
at that time.
So huh. It was kind of ironic the recording didn't work. And so then when I listened to it.
Or not.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, whoa. Wow. You know, I kind of got blown away by it. And then I had the updated reading and we talked about how to use the information in my hands a little bit. Every day after that, I decided like I wanted to take things to heart. And I had this card of affirmations based on my school. So I had the affirmations at my work desk. I had it someplace at home. And every day I read the affirmations. And literally about 3 or 4 weeks after I started reading these daily affirmations, I had this really bad work injury where I couldn't work. I couldn't do I'm a physical therapist and I couldn't work. And I was a little bit panicked thinking, what am I going to do for the rest of my life if I can't work?
So you were thinking this injury was a permanent one?
Yeah, I was pretty messed up for a long time. I also knew from being a PT for a long time that one of the quickest routes somebody can go down a dark hole is by getting caught up in their injury and not doing things. And I physically couldn't work. So the opportunity came up where to do the long weekend hand analysis thing. So I decided, well, that's a good way to keep my mind busy while I can't do other things. So
would you have pursued this if you hadn't been injured, do you think?
I don't know.
Interesting,
don't think
so. Huh? So it was a synchronicity kind of thing where I should probably look into keeping my mind occupied or look into, I don't know, learning a new skill, and then this opportunity comes up?
Yeah, I think I was trying to figure out, what am I going to do with this all this time that I'm not working? And yeah.
So it just made sense.
It just made sense for something to do, and I really ended up liking it and apparently had an affinity to being able to use metaphors to explain things to people. So after the class, the teacher said, I never encourage students to go get certified right off the bat, because I think people can just go off and do what they want. But she basically said she thought I had a good way with using metaphors to explain things. So I got my certification. I mean, I got my introduction course done and literally had to make a decision with less than a week whether I wanted to do the year-long certification. But at that point, I still wasn't working, doing what I like to do. So I dove in with both feet and did the year-long certification.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize the training was that intensive.
Yeah, to learn the rest of the data. So every week for not quite a year, but every week we would get download video and like material to learn. We had, I forget now, I think at least monthly, if not twice a week, conference calls where we had to send prints in advance. And so all the students that were in on the conference call, we looked at everybody's prints and then we learned data from that direction. I had to read for 100 people and get 100 signatures that I actually read for them, whether it was like a full-blown full reading or just a mini little look at their hand. And then I had to take a written and an oral exam.
Wow.
Yeah. It was pretty intense.
I never, ever would have guessed.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, let me ask you, What got your attention about your reading?
I think what's so surprising to me was how accurate she was about me and my personality and things in my life. She didn't know me. She didn't know anything about me. She just looked at my handprints. And some of the stuff that she told me also correlated. I also studied and got certified in the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator back in the, early 2000s, I think. So there was this correlation between that. And so I always find these things super intriguing that can tell a human being about themselves. And then, again, how can you use that information to be more true to who yourself? Because it's sort of like, oh, that's you and your whole essence and beauty of who you are underneath the core of all the stuff people tell you that you should do because you're good at it.
Right. Well, and to play devil's advocate, could somebody say that every reading could apply to every person?
They probably could. I mean, I think they could, but I think the thing is what I've found over time reading for people is, especially when I've done stuff in groups. So I've done group sort of like a Tupperware party, but people have a hand party. And I've read for groups of people. And if they're close friends or close coworkers, lots of times they'll say, yeah, go ahead and say everything out loud. I don't have anything to hide kind of thing. And I've been struck quite a few times where I read for somebody and all the people at the table will say, oh, she's been so good up until this point in time, but she totally got you wrong. And the person sitting there will laugh and kind of say, oh no, she nailed me. It's just that they present differently at work.
So they don't know the person's deep, dark stuff.
Right.
Well, I guess you could say that, why would they show their weaknesses or advertise that stuff?
Yeah. So I've certainly had those experiences where everybody else in the room thought I was totally dead wrong. Huh. And the person said, no, they're totally dead right.
Okay.
And I've had people who were suspicious. Another time frame, I was someplace and I was staying at an Airbnb and I knew the owner and she had kind of said, well, if you come down, I have some friends that are interested. Would you read? I'm like, sure, I'd love to do that. So this one woman came and sat down with me and she looked at me and she said, I want a reading. That's all she said. She gave no clue anything. And so I read her. And then she said to me, wow. And I said, what? She said, so I'm a physical therapist too. And she said, my friend told me about this. And she said, I had to come do this because I was trying to figure out why. Kind of like she said, I thought it was all BS. And why wouldn't a physical therapist who's in the same profession of me do this thing when it's got to be totally BS?
So she had to check you out.
Yeah.
And see what your deal was.
Yeah. And she was like, but that was so accurate for everything that you told me about me. So I think.
Well, it's interesting because that example you gave at the hand reading party, where it sounds like there could be readings that are less right
mm-hmm.
for somebody. I'm just thinking that there could be, it wouldn't apply. You know how you hear about like psychics who are mm-hmm. doing cold readings on, mm-hmm. and they're just giving you general information about who you are
mm-hmm.
that would apply to everybody, but it feels very personal. It feels very intimate.
Yeah, I have not, unless someone's not telling me the truth, I never run into that. I've never had anybody say, oh, that's not like me at all. And people cry and people get really verklempt during readings sometimes. I've had people like more kind of the stoic kind of people, the elements show up in the hands too. That's a long story, but people who have a lot of earth element don't show a lot of emotions. You think about earth as just pretty grounded and stuff. And earth people oftentimes will get like really misty eyed. And I remember one person said, wow, that's the first time anybody's ever seen me for who I really am. And they felt really witnessed or whatever words you want to use. Because
yeah, I could see somebody who has those earth-like qualities probably feeling like maybe they're misunderstood or they people don't get them.
Yeah.
And then to have you get them.
Yeah.
It's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's and like the side stories of people, like when you read their hands too, are so super interesting. Like I read for someone one time who had had a accident where they got frostbitten. And they told me all the skin came off their fingers. And they were curious whether or not they even had fingerprints and stuff. The only digit that they didn't get frostbitten one was a thumb. And that particular thumb is about where you fit in the community. And the whole entire community, which I thought was kind of astounding. It didn't have really anything to do with this person's life purpose or life lesson. But ultimately, because of the injury they sustained, the community came together to like support them and get them a new vehicle. And they did like a fundraiser to help with like, to like medical bills. And I thought that was just so ironic that the only finger that they didn't lose the skin off was the thumb that has to do about where you fit into the community. So, you know, like people tell injury stories sometimes and you look at where the injuries occur and it's about what's happening in their lifetime. That's really profound if you can step back and take a look at it.
Huh. That's super interesting.
Yeah.
What are some things that people can discover about themselves? You already covered some real kind of global aspects of your purpose, your
lesson.
Your life lesson. So what are some examples of life lessons?
Okay. So life purpose could be something like, some of them have archetypes to them. So there's the archetype of the tycoon, right?
I'm definitely not that one.
And who would want, like, oh, I'm the tycoon. That's so great. That's what I want to be. But they're not. They're not living like a tycoon, right? So what gets in the way of living like a tycoon? And most of the times it's a person's life lesson, and the life lesson is oftentimes our blind spots. Our friends and family and everybody that knows us well might see that pattern, but it's kind of like that unconscious pattern that we make all the time.
But we don't see it ourselves.
We don't see it ourselves.
Okay.
Or if we do see it, we're entrapped in the belief that I can't do anything about it. So the person that I just talked about whose community like saved the day for them, that's a positive thing. Like I fit in with my community and family. That would be the life, you know, if that person was part of their life purpose, they would be, you know, community based. But if it's your life lesson, it's the exact opposite of that. So it's where do I fit in the community and how do I fit in? And maybe feeling like they never fit in and they function a bit like the lone wolf. And so understanding your life lesson and how it shows up then gives you control over like, well, how would it be if I were connected to community? Or maybe this is not the community for me to connect to. Maybe I shouldn't try so hard here and I need to go find more like-minded people. So the information I give to someone, if they really want to use it to make a change in their life, they can. You know, sometimes life purpose people underneath feel like that's what they should have been doing their entire life, but never did because they were good at math or they were good at science and they may have like this entrepreneurial spirit to them, but they followed the rules and did everything that other people told them to do versus following this kind of inner thing that kept bugging at them. People ask me, oh, should I quit my job? I'm like, well, don't quit your day job. But if this really resonates with you, have fun, play with it a little bit. How can I get more of this in my life, even if I don't make this be the way I earn my money? Can you volunteer for things? Or, you know, it's different for everybody because there's...
Well, I imagine you wouldn't feel satisfied in life unless you were trying to pursue it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like hearing you say that, I imagine, is like giving someone permission.
Right. Yeah. And I found in readings of people, if I do a whole hand reading, I look at the prints, but I also get prints of the hand and I look for...
When you say prints, why don't you explain what you mean by that?
So fingerprints, I can take a magnifying glass and good light and look at your fingerprint style and write it down and tell you about that. I can also look at the lines in your hands. There's a lot of things I can look in a live hand. But if I get actual prints, so rolling ink on your hand and getting ink copies of your handprints it's like a snapshot in time. It's almost like this is you, May 29th, 2019, because hands can show signs of burnout and chaos. And so...
a handprint today could look very different than one 6 months from now?
Yeah. Or...
Is it a year from now. Are the lines actually changing, or is it just the pressure that you're putting on the paper to capture your print?
I'm a trained professional, so every time I take a handprint, I do them the same exact way. No, no, I always joke about that because I had someone question that one time because they had gotten a hand reading by somebody years before. And in the print that person got years before, their pinky didn't print hardly at all.
Okay.
When I did their hand reading, the pinky printed. They were convinced I had done something wrong in my technique. So I did it a second time and it still printed. And when they challenged me, I said, look, I know how to do this. I've been tested. But we talked about the pinky and what it meant. And the reason why they went to get a hand reading that long time ago when the pinky didn't print and all the things that had changed in their life up until this point in time. And with the pinky showing up, it was really indicative of how their life had changed in that time frame. So that pinky was non-existent like 4 years ago. It was not even showing up. It wasn't part of the picture.
So their pinky existence was
like
they were living up to their pinky existence.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, about issues around trust. And back then they were having a lot of trust issues. And now they were in a different place. And lo and behold, the pinky started to show up again.
So did that person kind of come around to understanding, like...
They were like, oh.
That's why.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess what you could say, there are no accidents when a print is taken.
Correct.
Of your hand print.
Right.
Yeah.
And people are surprised at it. I mean, they're really surprised at it because they can see that I put ink on their entire hand and they felt that I pressed down on their entire hand and I actually stick my hand under the paper and mush it around, and time after time, they pull their hand off, and there's big, huge places where there's no ink that showed up. Their fingers don't look like they attached to the palms, but that's all data to use with that particular person to talk about what that might mean and what might's going on in their life.
So you get a more thorough reading with a print of a hand than you would looking at a live hand.
I feel like you do, because you get to see where the ink's not showing up.
Okay.
It was a little messy. And so I think there's a lot of people now just doing live readings or getting photographs of hands and then you can blow them up. But you miss that burnout piece.
When I did my reading with you, I actually loved the handprint. I thought they were beautiful.
Mm-hmm. I do. People love them. And some people like go home and hang them up because they're just amazed by... They've never really looked at their hands that much before.
Yeah, I just think they look cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I think you asked about the lines. The lines can change too, the quality of them. Sometimes there's lines going all over the place. And so being really calm, taking the information, being really calm and following a certain path can make the lines on the hand less staticky. I'm actually watching one of my major lines, which they say major lines don't change. But one of my major lines is in the last 2 years has really made a significant change in the direction that it's going in.
That's crazy. Because I thought they were static. I thought the print you have when you were born is the print you have when you die.
No. And it can be. Like if you follow, lots of reasons why they say they don't change.
If you live 5 minutes, maybe.
Yeah. Well, a lot of reasons they don't change is because people just don't change, right? And so they go through the grind all the time. And every time you go through the grind, you keep making more of those neurological pathways. You know, it's like the cow trail through the field that still shows up 25 years after the cows don't go to the field anymore because it's that ingrained pattern. And so I think part of it is people's belief systems and what they can and can't do really impact it. So, you know, you could go get a reading and some people get readings and get really fired up because they're tired of the same mistakes all the time. And they take one small thing from a reading and apply it and then poof, things start to change. But if you go away from a reading and say, oh man, that's what I really want, but I don't think I can ever get that. Well, then you set yourself up to never getting that. I mean, it sounds pretty, I think it sounds rose-colored glasses sometimes, but I certainly have seen people over time that I know take pieces of information from a hand reading and make changes in their life. And then it changes other parts of their life.
It's interesting to think about what motivates somebody to change. Mm-hmm. And the idea that going to see you for a hand analysis reading mm-hmm. could be the thing that does it.
Right.
And maybe they've been in therapy for 20 years, but they go and there's just something about that presentation or there's something.
It's like people in astrology readings too, right? Like an astrology reading for some people, oh, that's me. And it sort of all of a sudden gives people permission to be themselves, you know?
Well, maybe, yeah. If you look at the hand as a map of mm-hmm. who you are, then it's like, oh, this person's just reading my map and reporting back to me this stuff about myself that I already knew or suspected or...
A lot of people just know. I mean, it's kind
it's not, like... It shouldn't be surprising, right?
No, it should never be surprising. It can be surprising, like in the group setting, surprising to people around them.
Yeah, because they don't know... Right. All facets of other people.
Right. But at the core of it, you know, people just are amazed by, or they just are amazed by the information that comes up and how it's really appropriate for the time in their life that they're in. So it helps them see the pattern that much better. You know, I think people come for a bunch of different reasons, some because they're just curious and they'll go, wow, you really nailed me. And they walk away with it and don't do anything with
it.
Or people that are in transitions or recognizing that they have this pattern that keeps repeating. And those are the ones that really, a lot of it, take it to heart. And they'll write back and say, oh, this was so, like, this is what I really needed right now to help me figure out what to do next. It's very empowering for people. The readings usually are very empowering.
Is there a time you recommend getting a reading done? And I don't mean like on a Saturday. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, like a particular place somebody's at in their mind or in their life.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like the typical stuff that at times I've read for people. Like young people are great to read for. Like when I've been at big expos, kids getting ready to go to college or college age kids. If for whatever reason, more women than men seem to do it, but a lot of the women are getting ready for empty nesting. I read people that feel like they need to change their career path.
That could be in a transition of some sort.
Transitions usually. Those are the ones that oftentimes it's a transition or a pattern that they're tired of mm-hmm. and they're just looking to see what they can get from a hand reading. Then again, I'm often curious with some people that I've read for what they end up doing in life. And sometimes I don't hear from people for years. I think I told you this story recently. I got a cold call for someone who wanted to do a hand reading because they were at a social function and somebody got up and talked about what they were doing in life right now and said it was all because of a hand reading that they got, that they were getting up and talking in front of this group of people and doing... They're not really doing stand-up comedy. I guess they're doing like moth radio storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because of something I told them about themselves in a hand reading that made sense to them. And so because they mentioned it in this talk, you know, somebody else wanted a hand reading from that. So you just don't know really when what's going to transpire for someone after you read for them.
So interesting. Yeah. So what are some other things people can learn about themselves besides we talked about purpose, we talked about life lessons?
Yeah, so those are the basics. Oh, so we didn't, the life schools, there's four schools.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned the schools from the fingerprints.
Fingerprints. And people can be in a combination. You can have a double major. but school of love. And so people in the school of love are here to learn about emotional authenticity and about dealing with feelings and how do I work with feelings? And that's a tough one for most everybody. I think a lot of people can relate to that, but school of love people really resonate with that. And when you describe the pendulum swing, like what's too much and too little, that's usually how I lay it out. Too much, too little, and what's the right place for a lot of these things? What's the middle ground? And yet the school of people oftentimes laugh about how difficult they have with feelings.
That's what I was just going to ask. What is a common, what are common traits of people who have a school of love?
So in the two pendulum swings, so, and most people identify with this end of it more than the other end, but they're the people that for whatever reason are not comfortable with feelings. They may not even know what they're feeling. So they have like the secret junk drawer they put their feelings away in. And they just keep stuffing feelings. I mean, they just don't deal with it. But I always joke with them, if you have the junk drawer, the junk closet at home, you can only stuff so much in it before it all comes piling out.
Yeah, you can run, but you can't hide.
Right. And oftentimes what happens is all those feelings come out all at once. But it can be at the wrong person, the wrong temperature or volume for the infraction. I mean, I use road rage as an example. I mean, people understand road rage, but that's this huge, probably collection of anger.
Buildup, yeah.
That just comes bursting out as some like stranger. Where the other end of the spectrum with school of love are the people that emote all the time. Like you don't, they don't even need to open their mouth and you know what they're feeling kind of thing. So they're like overly emoting.
It's all out there.
It's all out there. Yeah. Yeah.
So somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
But learning how to regulate.
And learning how to regulate
and express,
yes,
your emotions.
Because you do need to, I mean, you do need to say those things. You just don't need to do it like all the time. So yeah, people that emote too much need to know the balance, that it's okay to emote, but like not all the time, like your heart's on your sleeve kind of thing.
So somebody falling into the school of love category, typically you find they're either one extreme or the other. They're not already balanced or...
You know, sometimes when I read for older people, but or people that have been working their stuff for a long time, they'll kind of smile and they'll go, "That's how I used to be."
Okay,
but they've worked on it because it didn't work for them in the past. But then I'll say to them, "That's true. That's probably true for you, but it's in your fingerprint pattern, so it's going to be around you anyway. So it can be that." Like kindergarten to PhD level. PhD level, people teach other people. So you may be really good at it, but it may show up in your life with coworkers or family members or whatever where...
So you can run, but you can't hide.
Yeah. And I mean, and it can trigger you to go back to your old ways, or you could still be like you're so solid in the stuff, the work that you've done, that you end up being a mentor or teaching this person the same things that you learned over time.
So it becomes a theme in your life? Is that what
it's
you're saying?
It's a theme. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. What are some other schools?
School of service. So school of service is at its highest expression is joyous service. At its least best thing, it can be functioning like a self-indulgence or servitude and sacrifice. And people that have that one, they all laugh. And they own it. So most of the times when you identify things, people are really owning the thing that you tell them about them. They say, yep, that's me.
That actually is me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was school of service.
Yeah. And it's funny because people are in the right profession sometimes based on those things. School of wisdom. And school of wisdom is about one of two things. It can be feeling like you don't have enough knowledge to make decisions. And so you're always second guessing yourself or feeling like you need more data to make a decision and never kind of taking the plunge to make a decision. It can be fear about being wrong. But the other end of that is being like, I know everything and you can't tell me anything. Kind of. So we're along the end of line is that. And then the other one is the school of peace. And in times like this, people are like, oh, I just want to be in the school of peace. That sounds so lovely. But the two extremes of that are like being so peaceful, you're like a couch potato or this, I often use the Bose speaker example. A lot of people don't know this ad, but back in the day, there was a guy sitting in a big chair with the Bose speakers on and literally cows and things are flying by him and he's just oblivious to everything around him. He's just in his space.
In his music zone. Yeah, and his hair is flying back.
Yeah, like his clothes are practically blown off him. He's just in that space. And that's the one end of the school of peace. The other end is the panic part. And
so really reacting to your environment?
Yeah, but the interesting thing about those people is that a lot of them, they have a really peaceful countenance about them. So like in the workplace, they don't look like they're anxious.
But on the inside.
But the inside, they're just like anxious. My metaphor for that school is the plate spinner guy at the circus.
Huh.
You know, you can do so much up to a certain point and then everything has to crash. And usually what happens on either one of those till you got to handle them, you crash and burn. Like the service person that overserves crash and burns and gets sick. So they have to become self-indulgent to get better, to go back out. The peace and panic person has to drop everything and crash everything to go back, to get back to peace.
A little reset.
The reset button, yeah. And so the idea is to kind of start recognizing your triggers sooner so you don't have to hit both ends of the extremes as often as you might do if you're not aware of it.
Huh. And I imagine people listening right now could be thinking, well, I wonder what school I am, because it sounds like I could, like almost every one of those could mm-hmm. apply to me.
Right. Yeah. And I think there is that piece. Like, I think we're in all pieces of that stuff, but
one is going to be dominant.
Yeah.
Like, I'm definitely school of service.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, yeah.
Yeah. And people will get, it's kind of funny too, when I've done group things and I explain stuff to them, they'll self guess what they think they are and then are totally shocked when that's not what it is. But then you can talk about how that plays into what really is their school sometimes. Because the hand's the rest of it. The service person, the person who thinks their school is service, may have boundary issues someplace else in their hand. So they resonate with school of service stuff because it's about setting appropriate boundaries. But they might have school of love. And so, yeah, I do a lot of things for people to win their love, you know. So there could be boundary issues that show up someplace else in the hand that makes someone with school of love actually make them feel like they're in school of service.
Okay.
So that's why you want to look at the whole hand for the whole story.
Right. And so when you do mini readings, this is what you're giving folks, though, their school, what school they belong to.
Yeah. When I do a mini reading, I look at what school they're in because it's helpful information. It helps them start to take a look at their patterns a bit. And then I also usually look at the heartline style, which is communication style, and kind of say, how does this communication style work with that? So that you give people some, at least a little bit of tool of stuff. And I mean, communication is important for everything that you do. I think that's kind of the big problem. It's one of my soapboxes. The problem in the world today is that we don't know how to communicate, and we think everybody communicates with the same style of communication that I use, and that's not true.
So true. And then that sets up an expectation that,
right.
Of course, what I'm thinking is obvious,
right?
Right? It should.
Exactly.
And then the other person is like, never entered my mind. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Right. Yeah.
And so they miss each other in this communication because they have expectations that the other right. person will assume, you must know exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. My husband says this all the time. It's amazing that we could understand each other at all.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it's true. It is true. So yeah, now, because I know this stuff, as somebody, I don't feel like I'm communicating very well with them. I will try to gander at their heartline styles on both hands to see. It may just be that they speak a different language from me.
That's helpful.
Yeah, it is helpful. And so that's what I say when I teach people, this is who your type is. And the best thing you can do is own who you are but not as an excuse to be mean. It's sort of like, well, I'm a blah, blah, blah. So it gives me the right to be blah. It doesn't really, but you should own 100% own who you are, but recognizing that other people are different from you. And that takes communication style and if my communication style gets me in trouble sometimes, for example, the passionate heartline style.
I was just going to ask, are there different communication styles just like there are other?
Yeah. So
okay.
The passionate heartline style is a me first. So you think about passionate people in life, they can seem really egotistical. They can like stomp over people to get what they want in life. They don't really care because they're going after what they want, no matter the cost. But passionate people are also vivacious. They're exciting to be around. They have juicy, passionate lives. They're colorful characters. So there's nothing wrong with being a passionate style, as long as you recognize that you have to consider other people around you. You can't always just go pushing your own way all the time. The opposite of the passionate heartline style is what we call and so passion is fire. So the opposite of that heartline style is we call it the rational idealist kind of, it's the romantic idealist kind of thing. It's a you first heartline style. They think a lot about feelings, but don't necessarily emote it a lot. So usually we'll teach someone what their heartline style is, and it's like, own this. But when you own it, recognize that you're owning the downside possibilities of this heartline
style. So are those people typically in the school of love?
Nope.
Fascinating.
That's the thing. Like, there's no, that's why I was saying going at the beginning, I wanted the questions like, well, if everybody has the same fingerprint style, aren't they the same? Well, no, because
there's all these other factors.
There's all these other factors that make them who they are as a person. So I usually tell people when we talk about their heartline style, own 100% of who you are in that heartline style, the good, the bad, and the indifferent. But when that's getting you into trouble, try on 10% of your opposite, because 10% of your opposite is going to soften those more aggressive edges to your heartline style. And then I talk to them about what their opposite is so they can kind of play, oh, that makes so much sense. And so I actually have people that I've run into at the mini readings to say, oh, I thought of you the other day because I had a communication problem and I did what you told me to. Like, I make these little cards and they flip the card over to read what they should do in the moment to be 10% of their opposite and realize that they were just being too aggressive. And they just stepped back and said, oh, I'm really sorry. I'm just so excited about the thing that I'm doing that I forgot that I need to involve other people in my planning process.
What do you mean you have little cards?
Oh, so the schools. So a colleague of mine made affirmation cards for the schools. So I buy them from her. And so if I do a reading with someone, I always give them the affirmation card, whether it's school service or peace or whatever. In the mini rings, they talk about the communication one so much. So I'm still playing around with them, the design of them, but I've come up with a card that talks about the person's heartline styles.
Oh, so they can take that with them as a reminder of the polarities of the expression of the heartline, their communication style.
Yeah, and I used to just give them just for their style, but then I'm like, oh, it would be more helpful if it has the opposite. So I have cards that flip back and forth, and I just let them know which one.
So why would it be helpful to have the opposite?
Because then if you're at a standstill with someone in communication, it may just be that you're being, like, I think in the passionate heartline style, you're just so focused on the thing that you want that you forget that there are other people involved. And so with the passionate heartline style, it's helping them recognize that you have to look at everybody that's involved.
Other people in the room. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so how many heartline styles are there?
Four.
Okay. So then two oppose each other.
Yeah. So there's the earth heartline style, which we nickname the heroic stoic when we talk about it as an archetype. There's the air heartline style. These two heartline styles are both kind of underground. They have feelings, but they don't express them out in the world very much. So that's the romantic idealist is one term we use for the air heartline style. There's the passionate, which is fire. And then there's the nurturer heartline style, and that's the water.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
And then there's the simian line. We might as well throw that in. So I need to make a card for the simian. I get quite a few simians. So the simian line is statistically very high in Asian cultures. So there's some patterns that they notice when they look at cross-cultural things, that some patterns show up in more cultures than other ones. But the simian line, so if you look at your hand, there's three major lines usually. The top one is the heart line, the one that's closest to your fingers. The next one that's in the middle is the head line. That's your thinking style. But someone who has a simian, what happens is the thinking style and the feeling style are bundled together in one line. And so there's usually just this one straight line across the palm of the hand.
Oh.
So the oftentimes the simian only has that one straight line and then the lifeline. They don't have the three lines.
So is this supposed to be more ape-like?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting. That's a really, some of the, I mean, that's a derogatory term to use the simian line, and I'm not sure where it came from unless I've never looked at a monkey's hands. Maybe a monkey's hand is like that. When you talk to the simian line people, it's really interesting because they often relate to this, is that if you ask them what they're thinking, they're oftentimes can't articulate it. And if you ask them what they, how they feel about something, they can't necessarily articulate feelings because thinking and feelings are all kind of wrapped around. It's all combined in one line. There can be very interesting people to talk to as well. And in the few people that I know that knew they had simians were aware of it, because they have a hard time connecting with people. People don't know how to read them, and they feel misunderstood a lot of the time. They can be very almost robotic. Like, they don't have a lot of feeling. They don't have a lot of facial expressions or anything like that.
I think Mr. Spock.
Yes, I use Spock a lot because they're very Spock-like in some in their things. But super nice and friendly and oftentimes intelligent. They often are very, can be very laser-like focused in their, like that line goes straight across. It's like electrical current. It goes straight through. So it can be really intense. People, but helping them understand that style. And so then they can own it, right? But then they can also use it to try to help explain to other people or share it. Sometimes I find, like, if people share the information with their partner or friends, again, not as an excuse, it is a good, like, a good clarifying point. I remember reading for a couple, and the woman had a simian line, and her male, her partner just said, "Oh man, I just wish I'd known this.
I never would have married you."
No, they just said, it makes so much sense. I mean, this makes so much sense for me to think about all the conflicts that we've had.
Yeah, it puts things into context, like, oh, so I shouldn't take this personally, or I shouldn't.
Right. And they, so they had a lot more understanding for the for each other's communication style, which was big.
No, so. I could see that would be incredibly helpful.
Yeah.
Who knew that this territory was so rich?
I know.
I guess you knew. You knew that.
Well, I didn't know how much it was until I started to dig into it a little bit more. But it is, it's amazing stuff. You know, like, there's challenge markers, and challenge markers just make life more challenging. But again, if you can start to recognize your patterns, I always tell people, once you start to recognize the pattern, you've brought awareness to it. And then you have a choice. Do I go the old way, which is the easiest way because that's the way I always go, or do I take this moment in time to decide, ugh, I want to do this instead?
And it sounds like having a reading with you overall is inviting you to be more aware of yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is never a bad thing.
Right. Yeah, no, it's like, it's just helps you. I think for me personally, it helps me catch myself, and it helps me. When I start to feel like I'm in my life lesson, it makes me stop to say to myself, well, is this really true? Do you know that to be true? And maybe in this particular situation it is, but it's not true 100% of my life. So why am I getting this one instance getting me all wrapped up into the story when 95% of my life is not that?
So, oh, okay. So it can give you some perspective. It can give you some distance.
Yeah.
From situations if you choose to take advantage of the information.
Correct.
Which it sounds like you'd be kind of stupid not to. Kinda.
Kind of.
Is there a stupid line? Do I have that stupid line?
Well, there's a marker that talks about following other people's passions. You get other people's passions mixed up with your own.
Really?
Yeah. Desire pollution is the name of the marker in the hand.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, oh, that sounds like a great thing. I'm going to start doing that.
Yeah. It's a challenge marker, desire pollution. I kind of like the...
It's a great descriptor. It sounds like a miserable way to live.
Yeah.
Because then how do you find your passion?
Right. Exactly. Because you're just, it just, it's... So the themes keep... The interesting thing is themes repeat themselves in the hands. It's almost like, how many times do you have to get hit over the head with this piece of information before you start to pay attention to it? But again, the recognition of it, you can change it. And then stuff to change is in the hands. Like the desire pollution is just a bunch of lines. So that has the possibility to change over time.
Are there any other major pieces of information that come out of a reading that you haven't covered yet?
Well, you didn't talk about the gift markers. So gift markers, people get all excited because they think about gifts. I love gifts. Gift markers in general are rare markers. It's like, I looked it up again the other day, 1% to 3% of people have gift markers, and then it's usually just one. And a gift marker is not the universe giving you the gift of something. It gave you a gift, but it's a gift you're supposed to give back to the world.
Oh.
So if you have a gift marker, you're supposed to be using it in the world. And if you don't use it, then it kind of shows up in penalty phases and things like that.
What do you mean penalty phases?
So for example, a lot of people there's some trends for certain people to come get readings. So a lot of people that come get readings from me have the gifted healer mark. But gifted healers, you know, heal or heal thyself kind of thing, have to go through a bunch of junk. You know, they get sick and then they go through the healing process and those kind of things. So if I'm a gifted healer, then I should be using what I've learned in the world and my own healing process to help people heal. But penalty markers for that is issues around trust and communication. So it's just gift markers have kind of this pattern of showing you this is how it should be if you're using the gift in the world. But if this pattern shows up, it means you're not using your gift. So you're getting kind of yucky life stuff sometimes because you're not using that gift out in the world.
And that's supposed to help steer you back to your gift.
Yes.
Gotcha. If you recognize
it. If you recognize it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Apparently going to see you for a reading would help you recognize it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then it's the regular application of that knowledge. Otherwise, it just sits there in things. So, and it can stir up a lot of mess in your life if you're not using. I mean, it's sort of like the patterns. If I keep having the same pattern over and over and over again, I think sometimes that's supposed to be the impetus, the fire under your butt to make a change.
Yeah, it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we can get pretty married to our patterns. And some of them, I mean, I think they're also deeply unconscious. That's
right.
That we don't have an awareness until we bring our attention to them.
Right. And I always joke with people, the ironic thing, it's like, oh my gosh, people, it's right there in front of you all the damn time. And people start going, oh.
Yeah, but you need the interpreter there to help you understand what's in front of you in your own hands.
Right, which has always made me curious, like in cultures where some wise sage person gives you your names, you or tells you what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to be garden tender or something like that. Did that wise person look at your hands and know this data to know that you have a lot of earth in your hands and you're here to serve people? And
or they're just one of those know-it-alls that you're referring to earlier.
Yeah.
What was that?
Oh, and that was the school of wisdom at the side where you know everything and you just tell
them. Yeah. So someone who belongs to the school of wisdom would do that.
Yeah, the wise elder of the tribe that tells people what they're supposed to do for their career, right?
So I've had a reading with you and it was amazing. It was really just a wonderful experience and it was just rich territory. I never would have guessed. And of course, I already mentioned how beautiful I thought the prints were. So I would highly encourage anyone who's intrigued by this to seek you out and have a reading with you. How do you work with people?
Oh, well, we've referenced many readings a lot. So the first Wednesday of every month, I at local tea place, the North Branch Cafe in Montpelier.
Our favorite place.
Yeah. And so I'm there from 4 to 6 and people can sign up for 15-minute mini readings with me. The place is super great. They usually have the sign up sheet in advance of me being there. And so
you said the first Wednesday of the month?
Yeah, the first Wednesday of every month. because it's, I'd said it that way. I used to do more often, but it just, people kept forgetting. So first Wednesday of the month seems to be like a big day. Otherwise, I do full readings with people. It's best if we can to get the actual printed copies of your hands. I do that in person with my ink roller. I meet people in town or wherever. Or you could live in, you could live anywhere in the universe. And I would just send you in the mail a packet of all the materials that you would need to make your own handprints and get your own fingerprints. And there's, tells you all about it. I make it easy. I provide you with a self-addressed stamped envelope and you mail everything back to me. And then we figure out a time that works. And I meet people on Zoom. I send you an invitation with the link. And that way we see each other face to face and you can stick your hand up in front of your computer and ask me specific things. If you have a question about something that I'm talking about in your handprint, I show your print and show you on the print where it is so that it's like being a live session with me. Full sessions tend to last anywhere from 60 to 90 minutes, depending on what's going on with the person. And what
that's so great that you can do it long distance too.
Oh, it's so much. It's fun to do it. I've done several of them actually. And people are always surprised. They're like, wow, this is just like being in person with you. So
technology,
the technology is pretty great these days.
And how does someone get in touch with you?
Oh, well, let's see. Lots of ways. You could email me, which is a very long email address.
I will put it in the show notes.
Okay. You can, I have a Facebook page. You could contact me through my Facebook page. And I also post reminders there about when I'm going to be at the North Branch. I have a website. It does have my email address and my phone number. So there's that way to get in touch with me. So I'm trying to make sure that people have ways to reach me.
So what is your web address?
It's Halen, H-A-E-L-E-N, hands, H-A-N-D-S.com.
HalenHands.com.
Yes.
And I will also put that link in the show notes. But for people who might not have access to the show notes, because I think like on Spotify, if you're listening, you can't access show notes.
Oh.
I just wanted at least people to hear it so they can,
yeah,
they can look it up.
And I would just tell people if you're typing it in, the spell check likes to change it to H-E-A-L, like healing. Helen, but it's H-A-E-L-E-N. So just so you know, because people have had difficulties with that spell check thing.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, this has been really cool, really informative and fun, which
oh,
I knew
great
it would
fun.
Be. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me talk about this hand analysis stuff that I love.
And we'll have to have you come back and talk about your other passion.
Okay. That would be lovely too.
With your myofascial work.
Yes.
This really captivating, interesting myofascial release technique you've been learning and doing with folks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. It's like both things I'm super passionate about. And ironically, I'm wondering if that's part of the reason why my heartline style is changing.
I was wondering that actually, because I was thinking that the timing of it was about when you started studying this other version of body work.
It's still got some branches here and there, but it's definitely changing more into a passionate heartline style, which I think is really quite amazing and cool at the same time. So yeah, more to come.
All right, stay tuned.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
If you have an interest in learning more about yourself through the map of your hands, I hope you'll reach out to Kim. She's really good at what she does. I want to express my enormous appreciation to you for listening to Lucid Cafe. Next season is shaping up to be a good one. I need a little time to catch my breath, but I'll be back in September with a new slew of fascinating, inspiring, and informative conversations. Until then, pleasant dreams.